Welcome to Adoption Talk by Spence Chapin, the podcast where all the voices of the adoption constellation come together. Twice a month, this podcast brings you conversations with adoptees, birth parents, adoptive families, and adoption professionals as they share their experiences and discuss all things adoption. We're glad you've joined us. On today's episode, Broadway, TV, and film actor Raymond J. Lee and husband Robbie Kearns, life coach and founder of Guidance from Gratitude, discuss how they've used television and print ad opportunities to help normalize transracial LGBTQ families, advocating for their family at school and in their community, and so much more. Let's get started.
Hello, and welcome to Adoption Talk. This is Monica Baker. I am the Director of Domestic Adoption at Spence. I am here today with a couple of clients that I had the honor to work with 8 years ago plus. I guess, you know, how long was it before you adopted that you were working with us? Probably a couple of years. So
10 years ago,
two and a half years. Yeah.
So I've known Ray and Robbie for about 10 years now, and they are so wonderful and always keep in touch and keep me posted on how their daughter Ella is doing. And I remember the first time that I met you guys, you had just come off your Hawaii wedding and you joined each other as a family, and then you came to Spence Chapin to expand your family a little bit more.
Yeah, it was funny because I remember being at the first couple meetings, and I think it was all other, you know, being the only gay couple in the room, you could tell all the other straight couples had kind of been through it and different options and this and that. I feel like Robbie and I came in like, hi everybody, like what's up, like we hope to kind of just bring a little more, I don't know, a kiki energy there. It was a cool couple of first meetings.
Yeah. When in your relationship did you guys talk about growing your family, and how, at one point did you decide that adoption was the right pathway for you?
Well, Ray was talking about it right away. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I'm old. Because I was 40 when we got together.
Yeah, I was 25.
And so, you know, and I never really had thought about kids or adopting or anything. So it was a very new idea to me. And Ray was just like, that's kind of a deal breaker for me. And so we started investigating it and, you know, came to Spence for an informational meeting. And our friends, or Ray's friend from a show he was in, had adopted through Spence Chapin. So we had heard about the agency, and y'all had come highly recommended from them. Mm-hmm. And so we felt comfortable coming in, and then it just led to conversations from there.
I mean, we had talked about, you know, we had researched surrogacy, foster care, but I think seeing my colleague in Mamma Mia and how, what a great experience he had with Spence Chapin, and the fact that he had an open adoption was really cool. And that's something that after talking for a while, we decided to go that route. And we are so glad we did.
And you did, you went through this process of becoming an approved family in Spence Chapin's domestic adoption program. And then you were just waiting for the right match. And
yeah,
it came, it was about 2 years into your wait that it did. But tell me a little bit about that.
I mean, like it took a couple months to do all the paperwork and the background checks. And we joke, we wish every couple went through it, you know, and talking about like how you're going to discipline your child, how you're going to raise your child. It was good to touch base with that. So I appreciated all that like pre-work that we had to do and discuss. And then we had about like a 2-year wait and a couple close cases.
Yeah. There were several, you know, cases that you sent over for review that some weren't a fit for our family because they might have had special needs that we knew we weren't able to take care of, and others fell through, or, you know, like they chose somebody else, or even one family kept the baby. And so, you know, all of those things are very discouraging as you're in the process. But the one thing that you kept reminding us is to trust that the right child's going to come to your home. And so that's something that we share with people that are going through the adoption process, is like, just trust that the right child's going to find their way to you.
Yeah. Well, we've had, you know, some gay couple friends who are waiting for their baby who are discouraged, or even actually people from, you know, Spence who reach out and say, you know, how do you get through the parts where you don't know when it's going to happen? And we just say, you know, enjoy your time together, get your sleep, go on your vacations, and it's going to happen at the right time. And for us, you know, Queen Ella decided to make her arrival at the perfect time, and we're grateful every day.
And so, yeah, I'm remembering when Queen Ella made her arrival, and her birth mother selected you guys and met you and thought that you were the right family for her. And then not long after, you were bringing her home.
Yeah. I think we were the first couple that did a Zoom meeting.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Birth mother,
because Ray was out of town when we got the call. I came into the agency and met with you and the birth mother, but Ray was out of town. So we Zoomed in with him, and you're like, we've never done this before. And now it's probably commonplace.
And now it's commonplace. It's so funny to think back. And I remember the picture of you guys together, like, and Ray's on the iPad.
The iPad, like thumbs upping from St. Louis because I was doing a job. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I always remember that.
And we had what? I mean, we had a 1 or 2 weeks of, like, you know, it could happen, you know, it could happen. And then I remember it was like a Wednesday at like 4 p.m. I think we got the call, like, hey, you know, everything's been finalized. You pick up your daughter like tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And so Robbie and I picked him up at work. I was having coffee and cookies with a friend and told her, hey, I need to go pick up my husband because we're picking up our daughter tomorrow. And we went to bye-bye baby that night, got like diapers and, you know, bottles and got stuff out of storage and tried to get the room as best ready as we could.
What a whirlwind. And then the real whirlwind begins when baby comes home, I suppose, and probably hasn't settled down since.
It's a new whirlwind every day.
One thing I wanted to ask about was you as a family, I mean, Ray is an actor, so that is his life. And as an actor dad, he's roped in the rest of the family to kind of get in on this too. And there's been a couple of ads that you guys have been part of as a family, and which is so cool. And it's so, you know, I always love seeing your faces. There was a recent Target ad that you guys were modeling some family pajamas, and there was maybe a couple years ago a Pantene ad that was like a commercial, and that was kind of showing the nighttime routine at the family's home, and they were talking about their
I wish it was our home. It was a beautiful beach house in Jersey.
Wow.
I wish that was our home.
Well, they were doing the nighttime routine at a beautiful beach house in Jersey, apparently. And, you know, talking about being a transracial family. And, you know, it's just, I think that we are seeing more and more representation of different kinds of family in the media, which is so important, and so important to our families at Spence. But what has that been like for you all to be, you know, crazy, kind of in the public eye?
I mean,
before we start too, I'm just gonna give a shout out to Robbie, who's such a trooper about of it. Remember, there was one job for Blue's Clues Pride where Ella and I auditioned, and she was going to give me a makeup makeover. And then I had to leave to do a job. And so Robbie got roped in, and it's on YouTube. And it just looks like makeup exploded all over his face. Uh-huh. Oh, but it was all for fun.
I was like, can't y'all wait 2 days until he gets back?
No. Clues, no. Clues cannot wait.
No, never. No, but it's been, you know, the only reason that I agree to do this is to help normalize,
yeah,
you know, what our family looks like to people, like to get it out there in a very non-confrontational way. Mm-hmm. So people see us on the Target website. And because we've done two different campaigns for him. We did one just that was just Christmas.
Yeah.
It wasn't pride oriented. And the second one was pride oriented. But the fact that we're a family on Target's website and in their emails that's going out and showing, I thought it was hysterical that we were advertising Hanukkah PJs.
That was funny to me. they were comfortable. Thanks, Target.
but just the fact that we can be out there and people see our family, mm-hmm, and, you know, hopefully see the love in that without it being like confrontational and maybe change somebody's opinion, mm-hmm, you know, about same-sex families. The one that was really trippy to me is when we did the Pantene ad, there was a, not billboard, but it was, oh, yeah, it was huge, yeah, on the side of a building, yeah, down on Houston. And like Houston, and it was literally right yeah, across the street from my old office building. So everybody I worked with would message, and like every day I see your family outside on the building. And, you know, it was just really cool that here we are on the side of a building in Manhattan for, you know, being able to share what our family looks, mm-hmm, like, washing our daughter's hair, you know, or just hanging out and, yeah, you know, just showing that everyday routine of what we do as a family, just like everybody else.
I think it's important because the three of us all, you know, technically do have three different skin tones, but we are a family, and I love representing that.
Yeah.
And that's something that's huge to me personally. And, you know, like as an actor, you'll see these print jobs and commercials, and they say they're a family, and you're like, oh, that's totally staged. That's a casting call. And so to be able to be a real family on a real ad and people seeing, oh, families like this exist, especially for the younger generation, mm-hmm, that know it does get better, that especially if you're gay, you can be a dad, you can be a mom,
yeah,
you can have families like this and just have a quote unquote normal boring life. We always tell people we may look very like different as a family, but we are just as boring.
Well, it was also funny because one of our friends up here, one of Ella's best friends, the mom texted me one day with the picture, and she's like, oh my God, I just walked into my house and on my television, like the screensaver, you know, where they rotate through recommendations, the Blue's Clues thing came up with a photo of me with this horrible makeup over my face and Ella just beaming. And she's like,
beautiful makeup. Yeah.
And she's like, you know, my 5-year-old just walked in and was like, why are Robbie and Ella on our TV, you know? And so then they watched it and but you know, it's like knowing that this is just like popping into people's houses, yeah, and they see this and hear the conversation, yeah, of Ella's perspective of what pride is and, yeah, what our family means is just, yeah, really cool. And one last thing on is we did, the first thing we ever did as a family was a shoot for Con Edison.
Oh yeah.
And it was,
yeah, yeah,
it was all over the city and like, you know, bus things and the subway. Mm-hmm. And the coolest part about that for me was not only they got the shot within like half an hour, oh, which, gosh, was amazing. We didn't even know they were shooting, but because it was the first thing and we were, I was very nervous. It was
early morning.
And,
yeah.
And, but the photographer came and said after the shoot, she's like, I'm just so glad that I was able to get a family, a same-sex family, as part of this campaign, because I, you know, I'm married to a woman and have a child, and I just love that this is going to be out in the world. So just knowing that even the photographers in these, yeah, major campaigns are striving for that is really encouraging.
I have to say too, during the Target shoot, you know, Ella took some solo shots, and you know, we haven't taught her much. I mean, besides I guess posing and doing fashion runway walks at home, but she was like jumping and posing, and the photographer was like, oh, she's so good. And we were both like, oh my God, she is. We were so proud.
Amazing. It's so important. And as you're bringing up from so many different angles, like, you know, to that photographer, that it means a lot for her to see a same-sex parents, couple, a family represented, and to, you know, a kid that's walking and sees it on the billboard and is seeing another little kid who maybe is in a multiracial family or a multiracial family with two dads. And like, you know, to a, maybe like a parent of someone who's LGBTQ, who knows that their child is going to be, you know, growing their family and maybe not in agreement with that, or, you know, to normalize that for so many different kinds of folks. You know, that it's so important, and thank you for doing that. And thank you for putting your family out there in that way.
But never in my life did I think I'd start my modeling career in my 50s.
So, and Ella's 8 now. You know, has heard, is, you know, this little person who now understands her adoption, obviously, in an 8-year-old way. And I'm just curious how that has been for your family. Like, how do you guys talk about adoption? What kinds of things come up?
We've always been very open with her because, I mean, obviously we're two guys and can't have a baby. And so we've always been very open with her about her birth mother. And she's always known about her and, you know, over the years spent time with her. And that's always been really, you know, important relationship. And it's just something that we've continued. You know, over time, her birth mother recently got married and moved to California. And so we haven't been as in touch with her as when she lived in New York, but we still, like, one day, you know, Ella was upset about something and we FaceTimed with her because mm-hmm. she wanted to talk to her birth mother. So we did that. So we are in touch. We always send her, you know, little texts and stuff on Mother's Day, or, you know, just to check in with her and see how she's doing, just, you know, to let her know we're thinking of her.
Yeah. So, and something that we've always told her is to, you know, in school, even as early as kindergarten, you know, kids were like, you know, where's your mommy? Where's your mommy? You don't have a mommy. And she would come home and say, you know, daddy, papa, do I have a mommy? And we would always say, you do have a mommy. Your mommy loves you so much that she knew she couldn't provide and take care of you. So she picked papa and daddy to be your parents. And that's how our family was created. And she says, you know, she's like, cool. And she tells that to the kids too. Yeah. So she's like educating her classmates about how families work in different ways.
I remember one day when we were still in the city, there's a little kid who was kind of like kept on about, where's your mom? You don't have a mom. Why don't you have a mom? Blah, blah, blah. And finally, Ella just was like exasperated by it. And so I stepped in. I was like, she has a mom, you know, this birth mother, and she doesn't live with her. She lives with us. She has two dads. And Ella also said something to the little boy, and he looked at me. He's like, gosh, I wish I had two dads. And honestly, knowing his mother, I bet he did too.
I'm sure you do, kid.
But it was such a turnaround in the storyline that I didn't anticipate, but I thought it was really funny. Yeah. And then after that, he didn't say anything else about it, you know, yeah. But he wasn't doing it maliciously. It was just like, he wouldn't ease up on it. And, yeah. You know, and that's the thing. But we've equipped her to be able to say these things and to know her story so she can communicate it when people do that.
Sure. So. And, you know, this has always been your family. So it's, you know, this has always been very normal to her, but maybe a new concept to this child in her class. So, you know, what are some things that you think have been really instrumental in helping her be equipped for situations like that?
I think we've had like get-togethers with other gay parents and actually other, you know, straight parents who have created families through adoption, so that she knows that it's not just our family. There's lots of families out there who have become a family through adoption. So that way she kind of has her own little circle, you know, and to know that it's normal, it's regular, it's how some families are created. So that's one way I feel like we normalize it. Yeah.
Also, we loved where she went for kindergarten. The school was just so open. The PTA president was lesbian and had a son at the school. And but when you walked into the school, there was a pride flag. They marched in the pride parade every year. The principal was very supportive. There was like, they were having none of any kind of foolishness around, you know, any kind of discrimination or bigotry or anything at any level. So we felt fully supported that that wasn't even an issue walking into the school. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, you know, we moved upstate and Ella finished the second half of kindergarten,
yeah.
And then was doing first and did first and second grade up here. And the school has been so supportive, and we've never had a real issue with the school and the teachers. When, you know, whenever there's a special occasion or a holiday, like they message and ask how they want us to, you know, like Mother's Day, how do you want Ella to do this? You know, so it's been really amazing to have that support from the school, but you know,
that's so important.
Yeah. Well, especially being a gay couple, like I feel like sometimes you just, I don't know, maybe my armor's up a lot and when I'm not in New York City. And so being up here and having a huge, good, great support system, like we met a lot of Ella's friends' parents, like they come over and it's, and honestly, they would be people maybe in the city that I wouldn't approach, you know, because I even have my own stereotypes and my own ideas. But because our kids go to the same school and they have activities, we've been, we've also gotten to know each other, and it's just great to see this community up here that just wants to make sure their kids are having fun and safe and getting the best education they can. So
it's you know, that's it's so important, and you know, at times it can be something that families seek out, just really looking for a great school environment that's going to be affirming to their family and sensitive, you know, to the needs of their family and their child. And but you know, I also recognize that's not always an option. Sometimes the school district that you're in is the school district that you get, and you know, I imagine that can be challenging too. Has there ever been a time in Ella's education, or even with like, you know, camps or anything that you've needed to step in and, you know, be an advocate for her and your family with a teacher or, you know, provider of?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, when we've started at schools, we just go in and introduce ourselves or make sure that the teachers know that, you know, Ella has two dads and that's just, you know, that's just how it is. And we're more than happy to help out with anything. And, you know, like we really try to make ourselves a part, like, you know, I volunteer with the PTA things and go and help with the, you know, the holiday sales. And we would always take, you know, like do breakfast for this, yeah, for the bagels. Whole staff, like take bagels for the whole school and stuff like that. So people get to know us in a way. There've been in two different ways, there've been instances where we've had kind of issues. One was actually in Queens, which is crazy, that in a dual language classroom,
diverse
classroom. Yeah, very diverse, you know, promoting cultural, multicultural living and stuff. A little girl told Ella she couldn't have any of her snacks because she wasn't white. And so that was addressed immediately by the administration. And so that was pretty shocking that came out of Queens, you know, which is the most diverse county in the world, probably. And then up here early in school, I think within the first 2 or 3 weeks of school, some kid told Ella, she said, "You don't have a mom." Mm-hmm. And Ella's like, I do have a mom. I just don't live with her. I have, you know, and I have two dads. So again, equipping her with that power to step up and be confident in her family structure and be able to communicate that outward, kind of put an end to the situation. It never happened again.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. It's, I mean, I think it's an important point that, you know, these things will happen in Queens. Sometimes we think, oh, it's New York City, you know, you know, that probably wouldn't happen. And then you're surprised by some of the people in your community upstate in, you know, in a positive way and how, you know, they've become friends and are, you know, accepting to your family.
It's interesting too. I think also because I am Asian American, I have dealt with I've grown up with racism and discrimination. So when she has those moments, I do feel like as the, you know, the POC dad, I have the tools or maybe the more experience to kind of coach her through all that stuff and let her know how not to take it on, how to deal with it. Because again, like, and I mean, growing up in the 80s and 90s, I got it every single year and I got, you know, way more of it because it was a different world, different time. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping even like my experiences as a POC dad will help her, you know, now and in the future too. So.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We went to, they're closing the school she's currently in and she's going to another school and luckily she has friends that are there and from activities as well as some transferring over from her current school. And we just found out that one of the girls that's from an activity was also adopted and so we've started fostering a friendship, you know, so they have that support together. You know, so that's kind of a cool thing. But while we were at the mixer for the school, I was talking to the new principal and she's new to the school too. So she was very interested in talking about what we're looking for. And I just told her about, you know, so we're a same-sex family and, you know, and, you know, biracial and blah, blah, blah. And so just, you know, just know that this, you know, and she's like, oh, that's so cool. I just got back from my cousin's wedding. He married his fiance, you know, like his husband, blah, blah, blah. So knowing going into the school that the new principal is totally open and cool is wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's an actor, Broadway guy. So, you know, it's just funny how, so now she knows that Ray's an actor and we have a lot in common and, you know, so.
With COVID too, I think it's up here, it was predominantly a white area. Mm-hmm. And I mean, COVID kind of pushing a lot of people out of New York and venturing out. Like we've noticed, you know, it has got more diverse up here, which has been really, really cool. And I'm excited to see how it develops even more.
Yeah, it's been interesting with the school shuffle, hearing the parents and even just like white parents, Caucasian parents saying, I wish my kid was going to the school that she's going to because of the diversity. And, you know, so it's really interesting how that shift is happening. They want their kids exposed to diversity instead of just being at the all white school.
Yeah. Right. And also like being a POC, I've noticed like when you go to like a smaller community, people don't see skin in like the positive way. They just see people as people, you know, versus sometimes in the city in a more, you know, like a densely populated area, you're very aware of it. So up here, especially with the kids, like I think Ella's skin color is just like, it's a fact, but it's not like an issue. You know what I mean? So it's cool to see that. And she has her gal pals. Here they come over, they play their Barbie dolls and swim and run around, do each other's makeup in the bathroom and all that fun stuff. Right.
Wow. Yeah, it's nice that she has a real group of friends that it would be hard to do the same things, like even slumber parties and stuff in the city that we can do
in an apartment. Yeah.
So it's really nice that she has that.
Yeah.
I think at Spence Chapin, we really encourage the importance of community and for this purpose of normalizing adoption for kids. So being around other families who are families through adoption, being around other multiracial families is important. And as well as being around other families who have, a similar makeup as you, whether that's a family with two dads or a family with one parent or what have you. So, you know, I think that there's so many different kind of layers to tap into, to be sure that all of these different components of what makes your family is, you know, something that is normalized to her. And I imagine that's really something that you would need to seek out.
Yeah. And it's nice because we have another friend who was also in a show with Ray that adopted through Spence Chapin, and he's a good friend of ours. And so they come up, and so our kids can play together, and you know,
a lot of hand-me-downs because she's like 2 years younger.
So it's really nice that Ella has that, and they're kind of like, as their daughter's growing older, they're more like sistery, you know. It's really sweet to see that they can now play and interact instead of it being, you know, so like, why is this kid around?
It's like a brain difference, but now they can interact better,
so,
I think.
So that's nice. But last summer we had a group of like four or five couples come over. Like in June, just for a little barbecue. And it was all, you know, couples in there adopted or kids they had through surrogacy or what, however they, you know, had their created their family came over, just so, you know, people that are in the area could see, oh, wow, there's other people like us, you know.
Amazing.
And we actually tried to do something and then the pandemic just put a stop to it. There's a wonderful couple up here and they don't have a kid. They're in, you know, but they're just really wonderful organizers, and they were hoping to put together, you know, I was going to help them do this, put together like a gay family gathering. So like, you know, out of a little state park, but we haven't gotten back to it. Try to put that together.
And I remember when you guys were first moving up there full time, you know, at first it was more of a country house and going back and forth to the city, but I remember you saying, you know, just being a little concerned about moving out of the city and what that'll mean for your family. So I'm so happy to hear that you've really connected.
I mean, COVID, as horrible as it was a catalyst. We needed to be up here. There's more space. You know, she has a front yard that she can kick a soccer ball. We have a pool that she could learn how to swim. So if we've been stuck in our, you know, two bedroom in Queens, I don't think all of us would have survived.
It's harder for Ray because, you know, he's still working in the city. So he goes back and forth a lot, but
a lot of back and forth.
Yeah. But it's really, I think it's been a blessing to have this place.
Definitely. I do not miss taking the Q18 bus to kindergarten every morning. That was not fun. I love driving.
And Ella is South Asian. Ray is East Asian American. And Robbie is white. And so, you know, that's like something to tap into. Like, how do you help Ella have just a healthy sense of self and racial identity as a South Asian American person?
We have books, you know, about India and about the gods and goddesses, you know, the Hindu goddesses,
Diwali,
and stuff. Yeah, and we talk about Diwali and things like that. I think as she gets older, she'll be a little more interested.
Also, like, even like my culture too, like, we have moments where I'm like, all right, tonight is Korean food night. And so let's do some Korean barbecue. We'll do the lettuce wraps. She's learned how to take all the lettuce wrap in one bite, like daddy here. That's what a lot of Koreans do it. Amazing. Robbie's always horrified. So we kind of, I think, you know, and Robbie cooks Southern food. And when we go down to Augusta, Georgia, she loves drinking sweet tea at grandma's house. Like, we make sure to have kind of our own culture. Like, it's like a blend of all three of ours and honoring it.
And she does like some Indian food, you know, like there's an Indian restaurant that we pick up from a lot up here. And so
her doctor too, remember?
Yeah, her doctor was Indian. And unfortunately she just moved to California too, but But she was lovely. And she, you know, for Ella to see a woman doctor that was Indian, like, you know, that someone who looked like her in this role was really cool.
She even, like, I remember the first time I took her on the way home, she said, "Daddy, the doctor has the same skin color as me." I'm like, yes, she does. Mm. You know, I mean, we always talk about how she's the same skin color, but, and then Daddy, Papa, and you, all of our insides look the same. We have the same, you know, color blood. It's like with the same, like with two eyes, nose. So on the outside, we might look a little different, but inside we all have the same heart. We have, you know, we're a family because love makes a family. So.
And it's nice that you're, you know, you've remained in contact with her birth mother as well. How, from your perspective, and it, you know, not that you can speak on her behalf, but how do you think that this has been for her birth mom, keeping in touch? And, you know, I think that that is, especially when folks are entering an adoption process, whether that be, you know, a adoptive family or a birth family, it's kind of an unknown of what that's, how that's going to unfold. And it is different for everyone, of course, but what do you think that process has been for, like, for her birth mother?
You know, honestly, we don't know, because we always, like, respect her privacy about it all. Sure. I feel like if she wanted to talk about it, she would, because she knows how open we are. Mm-hmm. Talk about, I mean, you know, how much, like, we all love her, how appreciative we are, how much we support her, you know, with her career and her life. Like, when she got married, we were so excited. We got to visit her. And I feel like if she ever wanted to share anything, I feel like she would. I don't pry about
she's,
it.
She's very private and, but open. Mm-hmm. And that's all we can ask, you know, like, like I told you, there was one that day that the little kid was like, the little kid said, you know, you don't have a school, you don't have a mom. And Ella came home and she wanted to talk to her mom, mm-hmm. her birth mom. Mm-hmm. And so I just texted like, "Hey, Ella had a really rough day. This is what happened. Would you be able to FaceTime in the next couple of days?" She's like, "Yep. Call me this afternoon." Mm-hmm. And she was there, you know, and she told her, she's like, "Anytime you want to talk to me, you can always call me. Mm-hmm. Know that I'm here and I love you," you know, and that was enough. Ella hasn't asked since then. And that was in September.
And I'm sure she has her own journey, her own feelings, her own emotions about it. I'm sure. Cause you know, it's such a beautiful gift that she bestowed upon us, Queen Ella. So and if we keep an open bridge of communication and let her know that we're always there, I feel like if she ever needed us, we would answer the call, we'd text her, we would talk to her. So
that's so great that Ella has access to her and that she's been really receptive to continuing that. So I'm glad to hear that. So thank you both, and it's great to catch up with you, and thank you everyone for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for everything you do to help families.
Yes, thanks, Spence Chapin.
Yeah, and Spence, you were always so loving and patient and caring as we went through the process, and that was invaluable. So thank you so much.
And one last thing too is we've been had the honor of marching with Spence Chapin during the New York Pride Parade, which has been some of the coolest experiences we've had as a family.
Yeah.
Ella loves it. She thinks she's the queen of the parade, but we love, there was one instance I remember walking down with Spence and all beautiful families and seeing the older generations of LGBTQIA plus people looking at us. And in a way we were able to thank them for what they've done so that families like ours can exist. So that was something that I will always remember.
That's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, well, we will end there, and you guys have a great rest of your day, and thank you for everyone who joined us to listen along on this podcast episode.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Adoption Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating wherever you get your podcasts. You can also head to Spence-Chapin.org/adoptiontalk to leave feedback, suggest episode topics, and sign up for updates on the latest episodes. See you next time.